Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/spoken today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? Things here are good. I am going to start this week with my first success of the week and weird dilemma of the week for ages. And then I'm going to talk about one of the big questions. What if I regret dehoarding? What if I put in all this work and wish I hadn't? And then I have a shout out at the end with a top tip. So let's go. So my success of the week is that I put some pictures up on my walls. Now that might sound like an odd one, especially because I've done a whole episode before about not kind of rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, not papering over the cracks. And as I was putting these pictures up and feeling quite pleased with them, I was thinking, is that what I'm doing? I could be getting on with actually dehoarding, but instead I'm spending time hammering nails into the wall and getting these pictures up. I think the reason it felt like it wasn't a matter of papering over the cracks was this little kind of glimmer of hope that came with putting these pictures into frames and hanging them on the walls. And that was that I realized it wasn't that I was doing that and pretending it was the same as dehoarding. It wasn't that I was doing that and thinking it would fix the problem. It wasn't any of those kind of denial or distraction things. What it was, and this is what makes it a success rather than a distraction, was a little glimpse of me making my home a place I like, me making my home a place that feels a little bit like it represents my character, my style. And of course, it doesn't make my home a neat, tidy, acceptable place to be. It doesn't. But what it does do is show me that in the midst of all the dirge of day-to-day-to-day de-hoarding, something in me can actually see a future where things like what's on the walls will be how my home looks, will be representative of how my home looks, rather than everything that's on the floor. So that is my success of the week. My weird dilemma of the week is very much an example of do as I say, not as I do. Because I always, well, often talk about the importance of when you're donating stuff, don't agonize over where it goes. Don't agonize over donating it to the precisely most perfect place. If you need to get rid of a lot of stuff, just get rid of it. And if that means a slightly less optimal charity shop gets it, that is okay. That's fine. Don't worry about it. It's most important that the things get out of your home. All of that stuff. And then, because this whole podcast is me working this stuff out and me talking about stuff I'm learning but haven't necessarily nailed, I found myself in a position last week where I was in a different town. I went to get something from the car boot, and it is so full of charity shop donations ready to be given but not actually given. And I just thought, this is ridiculous. Find a charity shop here in this town and leave the bags here. And I had this whole weird dilemma about, should I give my stuff to a charity shop in a different town, or should I keep that stuff in circulation in the city I live in? And you wouldn't think that would be a big dilemma, but my goodness, I really got stuck. Part of me was like, well, I can benefit a charity in this town as a little thank you for being a nice place to visit. And then part of me was like, yeah, but you love the city you live in, and surely you want to benefit the people who live in the city you live in. And then I was like, but most of the charities are national charities anyway. So whereas my first round of thinking about benefiting the people was about the people who would be shopping in the charity shops, one of the other benefits, of course, of charity shops is the charity benefits. And in that case, whether it's Oxfam or British Heart Foundation or Save the Children, all the profits go to the national or international charity. There are some local charities, obviously, but the money doesn't look any different to Cancer Research UK head office, whether it came from a shop in the city I live in or a shop in the town I was visiting. And so whereas my first thought was, yeah, okay, just find a charity shop in the sat nav, go there and drop it off before you have too much time to think about it. And then I faced this weird, unexpected resistance from within myself saying, maybe this stuff belongs in my city though. Maybe that's where it should be. Or maybe this is the right thing because on and on in my head. And it kind of came from nowhere. I wasn't really expecting it. But the good news is I left the big charity shop donation bag in the town I was visiting, in a national charity shop in the end, because that was the one that the sat-nav suggested, and it all worked out well. But it just goes to show that just because I know the best advice doesn't always mean it's easy to follow. So today I'm talking about regret. It came up in a previous episode with Dr. Jan Epistol that people who hoard often have a really strong anticipation of regret. We won't get rid of something in case we regret it, or we acquire something spontaneously in case we regret not doing so. And that kind of anticipating future regret and acting accordingly can end up being quite negative for the state of our homes and the state of our lives and our approach to de-hoarding, because that ongoing fear, oh, I better keep it just in case, that kind of insurance policy approach to de-hoarding is what gets us in trouble and keeps us in trouble. And I know this is something I have to battle all the time. And there's two layers to it, really. There's, like, I have one item in front of me. What if I get rid of it and regret it? But there's also a bigger, what if I spend all of this time and energy de-hoarding and I regret the whole project? So that's what I'm going to talk about today. And I think a good place to start is that while we might regret something, I'm not going to say you will never make a decision you regret in the process of de-hoarding. We might regret doing some of these things, but the regret that we kind of forget to anticipate is, if we don't do it, would we regret that? And I think there's a fairly high chance that we would, if we didn't make any effort to make our homes easier to live in, easier to get repaired, easier to heat up, easier to use. That could be a massive source of future regret. And also, what if I don't regret it is a question we don't ask. What if I regret it might come to mind very quickly, but what if I don't isn't something we often consider. I know years ago, in a previous attempt to de-hoard, a previous short-lived attempt to de-hoard, I was getting rid of things by donating them to charity shops, but I also could not stop acquiring from charity shops. And I remember the first time I gave, like, a full bag to a particular charity shop, and my worry was, next time I was in there shopping, if I saw something on sale that I had donated, would I feel regretful? Would I feel like, oh, I should have kept that? And sure enough, within a couple of weeks, I was in that same shop, and there was a couple of things on display that I knew I had donated. And I was so relieved to find not just that I didn't regret it, but that I actually felt really proud. And I remember looking at each of these items and looking at the price tags and adding up the amount that this charity, and I remember very well which charity it was a hospice, adding up how much this hospice was going to get just from me giving those things, and then kind of visualizing what a hospice can do with that amount of money, whether that's just stocking up the supplies of tea and coffee for visitors, or whether it's providing therapy for one of their patients or whatever it helps with. And so my fear that I might regret it was big, but the reality was not just that I didn't regret it, but that actually I felt really proud and like I'd accomplished something. So when we focus on potential regret, we're not focusing on potential benefits of whatever it is we're scared of, whether that's de-hoarding or whether it's not bringing something new in. And if we can think beyond what if I regret it to what might I miss out on if I don't do this? What could I gain by doing this? What could I gain by de-hoarding? What could I miss out on if I don't de-hoard? And sometimes just reframing those questions when you find that what if I regret it pops into your head, try asking those questions, not necessarily instead of what if I regret it, but maybe as well as. So if you say what if I regret it, try and what if I don't regret it? And what could I miss out on if I don't try this? What could I gain if I do try this? And it's common for fear of regret to hold all kinds of people back in all kinds of things. And knowing that hoarders have a particular propensity for this fear feels like even more of a reason to try and get on top of it, really. And often with any kind of fear, especially if it's chronic and ongoing, it's worth probing a bit to find out what is the fear beyond what if I regret it? What are you afraid of at the core of that? Because once you can identify that, you can start to address it a bit. So what if I regret it? And you probe that a bit, and it might be, and therefore end up with no books to read at all. If I donate these 3 books, what if I regret it becomes, what if I have nothing to occupy my time? And once you know that that's what the specific fear is, you can start to go, is that realistic? I do have bookshelves with at least 500 books. Getting rid of these 3 is not going to cause any damage, especially because I've already read them and I don't reread books, or especially because I started them and didn't enjoy them, so I wouldn't want to go back to them anyway. Alternatively, if you find yourself saying, I can't get rid of that, what if I regret it? And you probe and the fear is because if I then need one of these things, pasta bowl, I won't be able to replace it. You can probe that a bit and say, realistically, is that a realistic fear? Given an honest look at my finances, could I afford a pasta bowl if it turns out I don't have enough of them? And given where I live and what transport I have access to, or whether Amazon or online shops deliver here, could I physically get hold of a pasta bowl if it turned out I don't have enough? And once you know what the fear is, it's a lot easier to see whether it's a reasonable fear or whether it's some kind of panic inside of you that's grasping onto these things through a fear that is actually quite easy to disperse when you shine a light on it. Another good protection against fear of regret is to start gradually and move gradually. If you can do it one step at a time, you can assess at each step how it's going. If you've done a little bit, it's like testing it out. And you can see whether your anticipation that you will feel a lot of regret actually comes true. It might be that you think you'll feel a lot of regret and then you get rid of something or you don't bring something in and actually you feel relief, or actually you feel nothing at all. It's just neutral. And if you do it bit by bit, you can then, at the next time you think, what if I regret it? You can look at the previous time and say, well, I was worried about that. Then it didn't come to pass. So maybe I can try with this as well. And do it gradually. And I know that that's not always, unfortunately, possible, depending on your circumstances. If you're about to be evicted or something like that, that kind of gradual approach isn't always realistic, which I think is an argument for trying to start to tackle this before you're in trouble for it or before anybody's taking action about it. Again, I know life doesn't always work out that way, but if you can de-hoard in a steady, ongoing way, that can help you to reassure yourself and to weigh up the pros and cons, weigh up what the fear really is about, and make more considered decisions and measured decisions that can help to kind of insulate you against future regret. Another important thing to consider when you're worried about whether you'll regret something or not is, as I mentioned at the start, the cost of not doing that thing. It's all very well thinking, I can get rid of this and that's a risk, or I cannot get rid of it and I have no risk in my life. But that's not how it actually works. You can get rid of it and that's a risk, or you can keep it and that's a risk. There are things you will miss out on if you avoid making the hard decisions. If you keep everything in case of future regret, that creates conditions to regret a whole different thing, which is coming to a point where you realize your life has been absolutely controlled and limited by this need to hold on to everything. Think about the opportunities of getting rid of things. Think about the opportunities that you will have if you don't bring everything home with you, if you don't place that order online, if you don't keep hold of every pencil that you find. It's not de-hoarding equals potential regret, and not de-hoarding equals no regret at all. It's just different regret. And we've got to weigh that up realistically. It's nice to think, I won't take the risk. I'll keep it because I can't face the risk. But it's not as simple as de-hoarding is risk, not de-hoarding is pure safety. And like when you're overwhelmed with a task and breaking it down into smaller parts can really help with that, you can do the same with decisions. If you've got a big decision to make, say whether to get rid of a storage unit that's costing you money every month, or get rid of a particularly difficult item for you, you can also break down that decision into smaller steps. Make it more of a process, more manageable. And like with doing the whole thing gradually, use those kind of increments and make the decision bit by bit by bit. It's less overwhelming, it's less intimidating, and you'll feel less like you're rushing into an important decision completely unequipped to deal with it. setting yourself a time frame can also be great for this kind of fear of regret, because it's a bit of a roundabout way. But basically, if we don't have a deadline, we might end up procrastinating, because hard decisions are hard, and so we don't want to make them, and so we kick it down the road and we'll do it later. But we also know, just through life experience, that every time we do that, in our minds, that decision or that task gets bigger and bigger and bigger and more and more and more frightening. It's that really typical thing where you put something off for 9 months and then you do it in 5 minutes, and you could have done it 9 months earlier and not had 9 months of just kind of niggling stress knowing you've got to do it. And it's the same with decisions that we might regret. If we know it's a tough decision and so we delay it, the fact of delaying it makes us think, oh, well, it must be really, really tough if I'm putting it off. So we put it off a bit more, and then we go, well, I've delayed it this long, it must be virtually impossible to make this decision without risking regret. And so it's hard to put time limits on things, especially if that's just kind of internally, like we don't have an external method of accountability. If we just say to ourselves, you've got to make this decision by 4 o'clock today, or you've got to make this decision by Friday, it's harder to stick with, but it can still help, because we need something often with some kind of parameters in order to make the hard decisions, so that we don't keep kicking the can down the road and putting it off and creating in our heads some kind of monster decision. Asking for help can also help. Asking for advice, saying to a counsellor or therapist, I need to make a decision on this and I'm worried I'll regret it. Or I want to try and start de-hoarding and I'm worried I'll regret it. That can be such a valuable conversation to have. Or friends, family, anonymous people on social media. When you can share your fears, that can help to quieten them a bit. And when people respond with, oh, I had a similar situation, I was really worried I'd regret this, and actually it turned out brilliant, I've never looked back. Or, you know, I did a thing and I regretted it, but it wasn't that awful actually, I just felt a few pangs and then I moved on. And those conversations don't have to be, you know, the other person doesn't have to be a hoarder. We've all, in every aspect of our life, faced decisions that we've worried we'll regret. You know, you get a new job and you don't know if you're moving out of the frying pan and into the fire, or if you're moving to your perfect new setting, or you're moving house, or you're moving your child's school. And, you know, these are things that a lot of us, we come across those decisions all the time. And then the very minor ones. I quite fancy trying a new sandwich for lunch, but what if it's not as good as the one I normally get? You know, we experience that kind of very small regret as well. And so even if other people don't have lived experience of hoarding, they do have lived experience of life. And that has included facing decisions that they've worried they might regret. And if you can get their perspectives on how they got through them, that can only help. And then finally, we do need to address the fact that you may make a decision you regret. Over the course of de-hoarding a whole home, there's a, I would say, fairly high chance that you'll regret a decision or two that you make. Maybe you see something in the reduced section in the supermarket and you think, no, I'm not going to get that. And then you get home and you really think, oh, I wish I'd bought that. And then the next time you go back, it's not there. Or maybe you get rid of a load of crockery and then realize you don't have quite enough left. I'm not going to pretend that's not going to happen, because it probably will. But what we've got to face up to is that it's something that happens in life, and that we are better equipped to deal with it than we might think we are. We might think, oh, I wouldn't cope. I would feel so terrible. But actually, it happens and you go, oh, that's a pain. And then you move on with your life. Years ago, it was a long time ago because I was having visitors. I'd been splurging on de-hoarding over weeks and weeks and weeks to prepare for these visitors. And that included donating a lot of mugs to the charity shop. And then in the days before I was having a load of family over, I realized I didn't have enough mugs left for everybody to have a drink at the same time. And any Brit knows that you have to, as somebody arrives, put the kettle on and everybody gets a tea or coffee. You can't say only four of you can have a hot drink at any one time. And you would think, I did have like a brief pang of regret. Why did I donate all of those? Now I'm short. But actually, while I felt that, it was brief. And then I felt like it was kind of funny. It was funny that I'd created this situation. And then it meant that I was kind of allowed to go to a charity shop and buy some mugs. And so it turned out so fine because I got to shop kind of legitimately. And it was kind of a funny story. Even though people in my life don't really know I hoard, I could say I donated a load of mugs to the charity shop last week and then had to rebuy some today because I've got visitors coming. And that's quite a funny story. And, you know, there will also be regrets that are more painful than that. I think we are so afraid of that feeling that we can still overestimate how awful it would be. And that we can't shut ourselves down and say, okay, I will never make a hard decision again in case that feels bad. Because, as I said earlier, it's not like inaction leads to no regrets at all. But also because sometimes life just throws regrets at you. And sometimes that's a result of a choice we personally, individually made. And it's unpleasant and it's uncomfortable, but it doesn't kill you. It doesn't have to ruin your life. I think the best we can do when we're faced with real painful regret, which I have to assure you is not going to happen with every bag you throw out, is not going to happen with every bag you donate, it's not going to happen with everything you sell on eBay. It's going to vary from person to person, but that kind of deep, painful, agonizing regret is an occasional thing. And more often, as I talked about in the episode with Jasmine Slay, more often de-hoarding leads to discoveries like, I thought this was lost forever and now I've found it. And that joy can massively counteract the occasional bits of regret. But when those bits of regret happen, It's not nice. But we can look at it and say, okay, what is going on here? Is it that I made as simple as I got rid of something and I wish I hadn't? Or is it bigger than that? Is it something about fears you have about your life? Is it bringing up other things for you? But also, what can I take from this that will inform future decision making? What can I take from this that will hopefully minimize the chance of this happening again, but not using it as an excuse to shut down and stop trying? And it's a balance, but it can be a learning experience. It can be a step towards personal growth and improving our lives and improving our coping skills and hopefully improving the state of our homes at the same time. I make this podcast because I think it's important. I started it as an outlet for myself, but it's become much more than that. And I hear from people all the time about how listening to me talk about my experience and interview specialists and experts is helping them. Hearing those stories makes the time and cost absolutely worth it. But if you want to help to ensure that the future of the podcast is sustainable, you can donate to help with costs. To send a one-off or recurring donation, just go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/donate. Thank you.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So, shout out this week to a podcast called Our Messy Collective, which I will link to in the show notes. They interviewed one of my former guests, Casey Davis. And Casey here is making a point about ethics. And it was this kind of philosophy that made me approach her in the first place to say, would you like to come on my podcast because your message is so valuable? Have a listen to Casey talking about ethics.
If you find yourself in a spot where you have to make a choice between doing what's right for the world and doing what's right for you, you are ethically obligated to do what's right for you.
I'm letting that sink. Like that ethically obligated to do what's right for you is
Yeah, this isn't about you have permission to not follow the rules or, well, you really should be using sustainable coffee filters, but if you can't, it's okay for you. No, you are ethically obligated when the choice is between throw out the recycling into the garbage so that you can function and don't throw the recycling out at all and let it pile up in your house so you stay more paralyzed. You are ethically obligated to throw it in the garbage. It's about being honest with yourself about what your real choices are and making the choice that provides the most good for yourself, your family, your community, and the world.
Right.
And if you need to replay that and replay that and replay that, do it. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.